Keeneland, every moment matters.
Welcome to another edition of the TDN Writers Room. My name is Bill Finley. I'm a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News and the fan of the hottest baseball team on the planet, the Boston Red Sox. Go Sox!
Wait, you're a Red Sox fan? Oh, and a Buccabano fan. Okay, more on that later. Randy Moss with NBC Sports and the Buyer Speed Figure team.
Zoe Cameron with First Racing and First TV would like to wish Sue Finley a very late happy birthday for last week. She obviously didn't get our text in France when she was sipping wine, but happy birthday, Sue.
Yeah, you only turned 38 once, Zoe. Right? How about that? Okay. All right. So let's take a look back at last weekend. And the Pacific Classic was obviously the biggest story then. We'll also obviously talk about the Alabama as well. But Knight's Bridge, checked off a lot of boxes. We know he can go a mile and a quarter. We now know that he can sustain a pace battle. And he was very good. We'll talk to Randy about bring this up. There was a major regression in his buyer number. So he looks to me like from 122 to 104. So he looks to me like a horse that did bounce, but was still off the bounce good enough to win. And he's great. He's just absolutely incredible. So Randy, I'll start with you. First of all, your thoughts on the race. And I think the main topic of conversation going forward is what should Godolphin do regarding the Breeders' Cup with also having sovereignty? And what do you think they will do?
Okay, the race first. The quality of the performance was obviously a lot better than the buyer's speed figure will indicate, just because of the pace of the race, going a mile and a quarter at Del Mar. I mean, there's a reason why I thought he would be fourth or fifth early in the Pacific Classic, because in his previous race, he had a nice measured pace. You know, he didn't have to really overextend himself too much. He could conserve a little energy, and he reels off a 122 buyer speed figure. Not the case in the Pacific Classic. He was on the engine from the start. And so therefore, even though the number doesn't come up well and the number doesn't necessarily match how visually impressive he was with his margin of victory, it was better than that indicates. Now, was it a 122 caliber? No, but so maybe he bounced a little bit, but it was still an outstanding performance by Knightsbridge. And I have him, as the whole world has him, in the Breeders' Cup Classic rankings, right? I mean, I have Sovereignty 1, Forever Young 2, and Knightsbridge 3. Do I think he's going to run in the Breeders' Cup Classic? My gut would say no, that they would run him in the dirt mile where he'll be, you know, he'd be 1 to 10, because they obviously have Sovereignty also for the Breeders' Cup Classic. But, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I kind of hope I'm wrong, because I'd like to see him tangle with Sovereignty in the Classic, Zoe.
I hope you're wrong, too. What a cross that is. Knightsbridge Bernardini mare just seems to keep on working. That's a hell of a horse race. I can only imagine this, John Sadler standing next to Bill Mott, and the pair of them are pulling their hair out and be like, what the hell are those two jocks doing? The first quarter, 23.17, that's okay. But then 45.94, and Junior engages Joel Rosario on the lead, and they go head and head the whole way, 110 flat. Incredible. And for him to stay around, and not only stay around, but draw off to win like he did, was an extraordinary performance. Phil Serrano faded to finish third, and the rest of them, the second place finisher, Original Sin, came from the clouds and was dead last. That's a hell of a horse race. Absolutely brilliant. But I would love to have a microphone on the pair of those trainers and just hear what they were thinking down the backside or saying, because I'd have been effing this and effing that, because you're like, what are they thinking? They're not going fast enough. Now they're going head and head. But it worked out, and it worked out very nicely. He is one heck of a horse, 2 for 2 around two turns. And, you know, if I'm Godolphin, the classic means everything, right? So it's not like Sovereignty is going to tackle him on the lead. Run them both.
I think if you had a microphone, right, on Belmont at the halfway point of the Pacific Classic, I think it would sound very similar to what you would have heard if you would have had a microphone on Lucien Lauren at the halfway point of Secretariat's Belmont. When he told Penny Tweedy, he admitted he told Penny Tweedy, oh, we can't win. No, he's going too fast. What's he doing? Yeah.
Well, I mean, Godolphin has very difficult choices to make here. And that's presuming that everybody stays sound and all that sort of thing. And I mean, what I wrote in the Thoroughbred Daily News, I mean, is that there's so many things to take into consideration. But Zoe, I don't know what they're going to do, but I think things that need to be considered is, number one, nobody cares who wins the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. I mean, honestly, the goal for every horse that you know is of this upper echelon and that can go a distance is to win the Breeders' Cup Classic. And Sheikh Mohammed and Godolphin have never won the Breeders' Cup Classic. And the Belmont had said that he believes that one of the reasons they brought Sovereignty back this year was Sheikh Mohammed's desire to win the Breeders' Cup Classic. Well, double your chances in there with these two horses. One of them's got to get beat, obviously. Maybe both of them will get beat. We don't know that. But to me, you know, and also there's the factor, it would be one of the greatest races in our lifetimes to see these two match up. But if I own these horses, I would run them both in the Classic for the reasons I just stated, that this is, you know, the race you want to win. It would be like passing the Kentucky Derby to go into the West Virginia Derby. I mean, that's a little harsh, I understand. But, you know, and we all hope that's what they do. Every racing fan on the planet hopes that's what they'll do. But, you know, it remains to be seen. They certainly don't have to make any decisions until after the Jockey Club Gold Cup and to see how Sovereignty runs there. That could also influence their decision. But it's going to be fascinating to see what they do. Okay, so let's move on to the other big stakes race of the weekend, which was the Alabama, won by My Guns Loaded, trained by Chad Brown. Counting Stars did not come through as the heavy favorite. Wasn't a terrible race by her, but it certainly wasn't, you know, what we've come to expect of her. Randy, since we've had Zoe's had the microphone for a little bit, I'll start with you. One of the things I know he's the hottest thing on the planet right now. We've said he's a shoo-in for the Eclipse Award. But why was Jose Ortiz intent on being on the five path the entire race?
Well, he was on a 1-5 favorite, first of all, in Counting Stars. The race was playing out exactly the way we thought it would. We talked about the complete lack of speed in the race and how big of an advantage it was going to be for Counting Stars. And there was no speed in the race. She was the only speed in 49 and change. I think it just came down. I don't think it mattered what path he was in, really. I just don't think Counting Stars was the same Counting Stars that we saw in her most recent dominating performance. So she ran well. It sounded like she ran poorly, but seems the horses aren't machines. They don't run the same way every single time, even when they have a pace advantage like Counting Stars had. All credit to the winner, My Guns Loaded. We pointed out that if any horse was going to beat Counting Stars, if any horse was going to jump up, or if Counting Stars happened to regress, the logical candidate then would be My Guns Loaded. And congratulations to the owner, Doug Scarborough, the son of Clarence Scarborough, of course, of Ali Sheba fame. He's also the co-owner of Always a Runner, the winner of the Kentucky Oaks. So what happens? Always a Runner doesn't go in the Alabama. My Guns Loaded does. He's the sole owner of My Guns Loaded. And Zoe gets the money anyway.
Yeah, terrific performance by My Guns Loaded. Just kind of sat on the outside, stalking the pace and drew off under Manny Franco, who's ridden her in all her starts. She's a perfect 3 for 3 this year, the daughter of Gunrunner. And as far as counting stars, I mean, if you can't win going 49 and change, she just had a bad day. And Mark Cassie said the same things, like, we've danced every dance and sometimes they don't want to dance. And that's what it looked like. And watching her train every day leading up to it, it's not like she went out there and flew around the racetrack. They jogged her next to the pony. She was fresh and bucking and kicking. And it's that old adage that horses can fool the best trainers, fool a Hall of Fame trainer into thinking they're doing really well. You don't know until the gates open. And that's exactly what happened with her. I would just simply draw a line through it.
And Bill, to your point, I mean, yes, Counting Stars didn't run as well as she did in her most recent race. That was pretty obvious. But to your point, I mean, maybe the outcome might have been different if Jose had, you know, given her just a little bit more of her head early and opened up and dropped over to the rail instead of going 3 to 4 wide on the first turn and 3 wide on the second turn. He was beaten a length and 3/4. She was. So maybe the outcome would have been different. It's hindsight, but it's possible.
Well, we'll see. I mean, she's still a fabulous filly, and congratulations for all her accomplishments. But you guys nailed it. Like Zoe said, they're not machines, and just wasn't her day. Lots of big racing overseas last week at York. The highlights were Baccio's win for Wesley Ward in the Nunthorpe. Notable Speech wins the City of Troy, last year's American Turf champion. Charlie Appleby says return to the Breeders' Cup Mile will be next. Apparently, he's not going to Woodbine for the Woodbine Mile this year, which he did last year. And then a big upset in the Judmont International, where Item, a 3-year-old, beat the two marquee horses. Constitution River was third. Ombudsman was fourth. Just because I'm a homer and rooting, obviously going to root for the U.S. horses. To me, Baccio's win in the Nunthorpe was the highlight of the York Festival of Races. Randy, your thoughts, and what was the highlight to you?
Baccio is going to be, I think, probably right now the early favorite for the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. Ombudsman, we'll say the same thing about Ombudsman as we said about Counting Stars. Horses aren't machines. He didn't get the greatest trip. He was kind of in behind horses, but, you know, I don't think he can really use that as that much of an excuse. And Notable Speech did have an excuse for his most recent race. You can look at his past performances. He does not like Ascot. He never runs well at Ascot. And to see him bounce back and win in a fashion as dominating as he won this past weekend, he's got to be the leading contender right now to defend his title in the Breeders' Cup Mile. Because we know for a fact that if Notable Speech is the same Notable Speech that he's been the last couple of years, none of the American milers can touch him.
Yeah.
If he gets a decent trip.
Yeah. Notable Speech, very impressive. And he obviously likes running in the U.S., so that's a big plus. Baccio, he was absolutely fantastic. Kudos, Juan Hernandez going over there, giving him a stellar ride, just going to the lead and not looking back. Love the shots of him running with his bags to jump on a helicopter to get to Heathrow, because it's a bit of a drive from York back down to London. Well done to Tori and Jimbo Gladwell. Homebred for them. They were on hand and they had an absolutely brilliant time. They may have been hurting a little bit the next day, but they said it was well worth it. It was a great day of racing at York, or great few days. Item was not the most impressive looking winner of the Judmont. He looked a little bit drunk coming down to the line, but he got the job done. He definitely struggled a little bit the last 16th. In fact, I watched it this morning. I'm like, God, I know he won, but how did he win? He's like running sideways on the wrong lead, and he was all over the place, but he got the job done. So we've got more to look forward to with the Winning Your In Races Breeders' Cup.
And Randy, don't sell short an American horse by the name of Deterministic. He's pretty darn good. But obviously Notable Speech is a pretty special horse as well. All right. So we're going to take a break. We're going to find out what's going on at Keeneland. Randy will tell us who the fastest horse of the week is. Then buckle up, because our Gainsway guest of the week is none other than Mike Rapoli. And in typical Mike Rapoli fashion, boy, does he have a lot to stay with us.
I do want to remind you that each and every week, the TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. What's better than seeing your sales graduate win the Alabama? It's seeing three of your sale grads complete the trifecta. Keeneland September sale grads did just that in the grade one Alabama last Saturday at Saratoga, when My Guns Loaded, who sold in book number two, won the race. Measure out of book one was second, and Counting Stars, who sold in book five, finished third. This year's Keeneland September sale starts on September the 14th. I'll be there. I hope to see you there. Make plans to attend. Learn more at www.keeneland.com.
We do this so your granddaughter can work on a farm someday. So the stands will still be packed in 50 years. That's why we come to work every day. Obsess over every single detail. Because the story of racing is written one moment at a time. And the future of our industry deserves nothing less. Keeneland, every moment matters.
Our Fastest Horse of the Week segment brought to you by the Fast Sires at Windstar Farm. The folks at Windstar are absolutely over the moon right now with their first year stallion, Life Is Good. And why not? I mean, we knew how fast Life Is Good was as a racehorse and as a stallion. Right now, he is on an absolute roll with his first crop. He had his 11th first crop winner on Saturday at Ellis Park when Harmoniously won her career debut with Determination. And Life Is Good is now the number one first crop sire of black type horses and graded stakes horses, and the fastest ever to rack up four TDN Rising Stars classifications. Life Is Good at Windstar Farm. Fastest horse of the week. We've already talked about Knightsbridge in the Pacific Classic with his 104 buyer speed figure. That is much better the way the race was run than a 104 would indicate. Give him a little extra credit for that. It's not a 122, but still an outstanding performance and good enough to make Knightsbridge our fastest horse of the week.
Welcome in now the Gainsway guest of the week, and it promises to be entertaining because it's the commish. You know him, also know him as Mike Rapoli, and he's got one of the favorites in the Travers this week. He's the co-owner of Renegade. And Mike, I know you're chomping at the bit to talk about some of your favorite subjects, like your pals over at the Jockey Club and Heisa, but let's talk about Renegade first. And my question is, as well as he's been running and as good a horse as he is, how do you turn the tables on Golden Tempo, who beat you in both the Derby and the Belmont?
First of all, Bill, I always like to say hello to Randy, but most importantly, Zoe, and good afternoon to you, Bill. And, there's a lot of interesting things about racing, and we got the Travers this week, and, you know, I've been fortunate to be in the race a couple times. I have two canoes, one in my house in New York, one in Florida. I'm looking for canoe number three. And listen, I mean, it's going to be a great race. And, you know, with everything that's happened in racing over the last 3 weeks, you know, I can honestly tell you, I'm not as excited about the race as I probably should, which is a little disappointing because I think you guys know my love and passion for this game. To have, you know, maybe the favorite at a post time or the co-favorite. And a great rematch between Golden Tempo and Renegade. And man, there's eight other good horses that can win the race. We all know that. I think it's, with the news the last two or three weeks, I think the race, at least for me, I hope not for the fans, cause I would feel even worse, but I don't know. It's I'm going to get there Thursday night. And usually I get a lot more excited and I have a lot more passion for the game. And, you know, I'm a competitor, but you know, I can't tell you that, you know, it just doesn't feel the same, I'll be honest with you.
All right, so I guess I got to lob the softball over the plate then, Mike. You said before we started taping this, it's been a bad two or three weeks for you, a tough two or three weeks. So why?
Yeah, I mean, you guys know. I mean, let's be honest with you. Everybody thinks I'm crazy. I'm going to agree that I am. The only thing I do better than being crazy is acting crazy. I know how to ramp up crazy. I know how to get effects out there. This has been 3.5 years I've started the NTA. And I think why is, I think over the last 3 weeks, for the first time, Randy, as bad as I thought this industry was 3.5 years ago, and I wanted just to get it to be transparent and put it out there. And, you know, I'm good friends with all three of you. And, you know, when I started this, you know, I always joke with Bill. I said, Bill, what's the chances of me making change? And Bill gave me the best. And I said, Bill, don't treat me like we went to high school together. Be honest. He said, Mike, you got a 1% change, 1% chance. And I love that answer. I love challenges. I think this last 2 or 3 weeks, it's one scandal after another, in whether it's a horse player, whether it's a training, whether it's files. I mean, you know, whether you can't even name a jockey, people don't know that we can't even, we got to cancel a race because of the distance. Like, there's just so much going on, and things that it comes from a member of the jockey club, a well-respected member of the industry. It comes from inside. I was more right than I thought. And usually, I guess people would say, wow, Mike, you're vindicated. And I've been getting a lot of texts the last 3 weeks, and everyone makes me feel bad. They said, Mike, you were so right about this. And I swear to God, my response back is, I actually was wrong. It's worse than I thought.
For people that have been maybe hiding under a rock, you said more right than you thought. Can you explain that for someone that, you know, may have been hiding under a rock for the last 3 weeks?
Zoe, I don't think it's more right. It's deeper than I thought.
Like, what's deeper?
Well, I mean, everything. I mean, listen, you know, the jockey club at the end of the day has enough control, and it pulls the entire puppet strings of this entire sport. Okay. It's the blue bloods. It's the pheasant hunters, whatever I want to call them. You know, they have the control, and they tell you they don't, but they do get the control. There is overlapping boards. There's conflicts of interest. That if any other really regulated business, you couldn't be the House of Rep, you couldn't be the Congress, you couldn't be the Senate, you couldn't be the President, the Vice President. You can't. They own every single entity. They, you know, one guy is a jockey club steward. The other, then three of them happen to be trustees at Keeneland, and they had to happen to be the vice chair of the Breeders' Cup, and they happen to be the Cobra chairman and NTRA, like. Wherever you look, there's just overlap. It's the same 15 people across the board that are making it. Now, remember when HISA was put on, the jockey club led this investigation. And listen, they found a lot of things. They only put out what they wanted to put out. They got two people. There was probably 15 or 20. And they said, these are the two guys that we want to target. No problem. And everybody will tell you about that. So they got HISA to come on board. And then Bill Lear's, you know, law agency decides to write the bylaws, and Bill Lear's brother-in-law happens to be on the HISA board. And then the guy that works in Bill Lear's office, his law firm has employed the head of the jockey, the head of, Keeneland, the head of the Breeders' Cup, and the head chief general counsel for HISA just happened to come out of Bill Lear's law firm. That's unbelievable. What coincidences we have there. And his brother-in-law is on the board members. And, you know, I asked recently, and I'm still going to be at it. You know, one of the things Lisa Lazard said at HISA is Marshall has to repay the cost of the investigation. I guess it was a couple million dollars. It was $80,000. How deep did you really, for $80,000, I paid $80,000 to have someone find two emails for me. Never mind an investigation. So $80,000, that's not going to tell us. Do we really think Marshall was the only one that had access? Do you really believe? Listen, Marshall's an idiot. Marshall's did a bad thing. Before that, he was one of the well-respected jockey club members, and he's an owner, and he was a gambler, and He was what? Rumor was it, I don't know if you guys have heard this, he might have been 6 weeks away from being a Jockey Club steward. Ask him if that's true. He was going to be a Jockey Club steward. Can you imagine if this came out 6 weeks after he was made a steward?
Hey, Mike, so because you are so, what's the right word I'm looking for? So passionate about these issues that you're bringing forward, you have called for a third-party investigation into everything relevant inside both HISA and the Jockey Club. You recommended two firms, Nardello and Company, and I can never read my handwriting, Stone something or other. But anyways, and you also said that you will pay for 100% of whatever this costs.
Yes.
Have you gone, other than putting this on Twitter, have you gone directly to the Jockey Club and made this proposal and or HISA? And have you heard back from anybody about this?
It's gotten to the Jockey Club indirectly through me to them, and it's gotten to HISA indirectly to me to them. And I actually have one or two other bigger people and or entities that are maybe very close to saying that they're willing to join me and split the cost with me. I've had two or three entities, and whether they do or not, I mean, first of all, what's if HISA and the Jockey Club with Encompass and Equibase and their members, if I'm willing to put up all the cost, remember Everett Dobson has come in and said two things. Number one, he agrees with 95% of it, what I agree with. I got news for you. We spend a lot more time on the 5% because I haven't seen the 95%, but that's okay. His number one pillar at the Jockey Club round table was transparency. Lisa Lazarus has talked about HISA and transparency and moving quick, and transparency is the building blocks and what do you call it? I even tell my daughter and my employees, if you're going to talk the talk, you got to walk the walk. If you really are saying the number one pillar is transparency and the building blocks for the industry is transparency, I'll make it easy for you. Take two, you pick it out, and I'll pay for it. I mean, I'll ask you guys, Randy, Zoe, Bill, should they take me up on their offer? Doesn't it make sense that they would? I got to ask you guys. I mean, we're all having our own conversation.
Randy, you want to tackle that question?
Well, if you were involved in the investigation, they would probably think that you had an axe to grind. But if you're just paying for it and it's a completely independent investigation, then I would see no reason why they would turn that down unless they felt like they had something to hide.
I would 100% agree with that. Absolutely.
I think the industry deserves to know, right? I mean, listen, if you're a horse player, right? How can you bet on a game that's not fair to bet? You know, whether the CAWs obviously are getting more information, they have access like this, or they have, you've taken the retail player out. I would tell every single horse player, go bet a football game. Go bet a baseball game. Go, stay away. It's just not fair. And I actually think it's borderline criminal that we take their money, you know, and we know that there are people who have different. Imagine the NFL gave the injury report to only 10% or 5% of the people. And then you find out that Tom Brady in his prime is not playing and 10% of the people knew and the spread was 10 and his backup, the spread would have been 3. How is that fair? And the other thing that Pat and I have recently found out is that any vet is allowed to go in, approved vet, into the HISA portal and check on anybody else's horse. I can check on your horse, Zoe, your horse, Randy, your horse. Now, the other trainer does get a notification that this vet went in. What's he supposed to do? Call, hey, why'd you go check on this horse for me? What's going on here? I mean, I guess they could, but it's happening. And if you guys think that Marshall Graham is the only one, and Marshall Graham, this has just happened in the last 6 weeks, not maybe the last 2 years. You know what? It doesn't matter whether it's true or not. We deserve to know. So we have to do that investigation, right? I mean, we've been complaining about all these CAWs. The 8-1 shot goes off at 2-1 and wins by 5. And we've been saying they've been getting other information. And we've seen it a lot more over the last. Would you guys agree that since Heiser's been up, we've been seeing these drops in the last 2 or 3 years a little bit more? And then the other thing is, and I, by the way, I like Lisa. She never had a chance to begin with. I mean, you know, the Jockey Club forced us upon, put it out there in typical Jockey Club fashion. They did a victory lap. They gave Stuart Janney an Eclipse Award. Can we get that back, by the way? Can we get that back, by the way? I mean, you know, can we get that back? I mean, that's the biggest farce. I mean, you know, like, give it back. You know, you just give it back. You know, we had $275 million in 3 to 4 years. And really, you know, and you guys, I've heard you guys over the last 3 years. Oh, Heiser, I think, is good. It's not. It's not. It's not. It's not. And if you thought it was good 3 years ago, I understand. If you thought it was good 2 years ago, I would say, man, you're really rooting for them. If you thought it was good last year, I'm like, you got to be losing a little faith. If you tell me today you think it's good for the game, I got to think you're either on their side, you're naive, or being as polite as possible, you're one dumb person. Okay? Being as nice as possible.
All right. I got a question for you. As we like exit this, what's up with Irad?
Irad is not in the Heiser or the Jockey Club. No. Zoe, sometimes it's like a really cool, you know, transition, and then there's that. But we'll go back to horse racing. But let's just be honest. I'll talk all about horse racing. But the everyone in this industry deserves to know the Stuarts. I know the Stuarts personally. They're good family guys. They're all that. They're not capable. And let's just go back to one thing. The top of the game, the top 5%, tracks, owners, breeders, CAWs are all doing well. 95% in this game, if you're a trainer at a small track, if you're a small breeder, if you're a small owner, if you're a small horse player, this game is so unfair to those 95%. And Zoe, I'm passionate about this because my blue bloods came from my dad being a waiter born in France and my mom being a seamstress. Those are my blue bloods. You know, I didn't come over here in the Mayflower. You know, it didn't work that way. And you know what? I know that I've had tremendous success and you know, he's a billionaire. What does he have to worry? I got a heart, man. And I really care. And the number of people that come up to me, young fans, young trainers, gamblers, old timers that say, Mike, you're the only one fighting for the little guy. And I, you know what? I'm still always going to be Mike from Queens. I'm still the little guy. Okay. And I'm going to continue to do it, but I really need the journalists in this game and other trainers and bigger entities to stand up. What I'm asking for is a third party independent, and we have to get to the bottom of this. This has been going on more than 6 weeks. This has been going on probably for 2 years. This is a lot deeper. There will be a lot more names. You know, it's almost like in baseball when you had the steroid era. It wasn't just one person. It was
multiple. Let me ask you about something else real quick. That's also an institutional issue. And I know you're probably expecting this from me because I reached out to Pat Cummings about it. I think the Triple Crown is the number one property in thoroughbred racing. And you have tweeted that out in the past that you believe that to be true. I know you're a New York guy, but what's your opinion about what's being done to the Triple Crown right now?
That Churchill, Maryland, and Naira couldn't get in a room and work this out together is the number one stupid move I've ever seen in my life. Okay. They should have sat in the room and say the Triple Crown is broke. It's 3 years and some of the biggest owners in the game, Gandolfin doesn't need a lot of money. Okay. They decided to pass. We know who won it last year because I know a guy that came in second by a head, unfortunately. And I'm telling you right now, if Renegade won, we could not have raced him. He got hit so hard against the rail. He lost a ton of weight. Todd was hesitant about running him in the Belmont. And he wanted to do a Fiercest where he would give him the entire time off. And at the end, Todd made the decision, but he just thought he was had enough to win. Right now, Todd was so confident that Jim Dandy, and Todd just did an interview on Sunday about how Renegade's doing. And he says he's getting better and he's peaking. And that doesn't sound like Todd Pletcher. When Todd Pletcher talks like that. So what I'm saying is Renegade barely got ready for 5 weeks. Remember, with the Heiser rules, some of the therapeutic medications that help these horses go out and train and go out and get ready, in a 2 week turnaround, you can't do anything. So it couldn't work. So now what I got mad at, Randy, was Maryland decided we're going to move on Oral. We keep losing the jockey winner. We're going to screw the Belmont because we've been screwed. So we're going to move it back.
No.
I know you don't think that.
That's not what happened.
What happened then?
What happened was that Naira and Maryland had come to an agreement, and there is a written agreement from Naira that said they would move the Belmont Stakes to June the 12th from June the 5th if Fox got the TV contract. They made a contingent about Fox getting the TV contract for the Preakness. And when they didn't, they moved it back to June the 5th and tried to beat the Preakness to the punch by scheduling the news conference of 2 days before they knew Maryland's announcement was going to be made.
So I guess what you're saying, which is shocking to me, Churchill is trying to do what's best for them. Maryland is trying to do what's best for them. And Naira is trying to do best for them. I never saw that coming, Randy. That is shocking, Randy.
That's shocking. I know.
The whole effing game. See, I'm not even cursing. I'm using effing. Is all about being a selfish person and just do best what's best for you. That's it. So Naira tried to negotiate a deal that was better for them. Yes, I believe that. So Maryland came back and negotiated a deal that was better for them. Yes, I believe that. And Churchill wanted to make sure they had the best deal for them. That's what happens at every sales, every breeding farm, every track, everything. So what I was in support of was, where does it change the Triple Crown? If you want to go win the Triple Crown, you could still do it the same way. But now you've added three more races. It didn't take away from the Triple Crown. People were skipping the race anyway. And I told you, if Renegade won the Derby, 0% chance he could have raced. Zero. And next year it will be the same thing. Everybody talks. Listen, the most naive fans, I don't like to call them naive. You know what? You're changing history. Does the NFL still play with leather helmets? No. I guess they changed. Does hockey players play without helmets? I guess they changed the history. If you change, I mean, I'm just going to, do people know what the testing was in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and what these horses ran on? I don't want to hear about these super horses that ran on what? I'm not going to accuse people what they ran on, but I guarantee you they ran on a lot more than just oats and hay. Okay? So stop telling me they're not built the way. I mean, there was a steroid era in baseball, right? There might have been a steroid era in horse racing, too. Randy, do you think steroids were used?
Definitely. It was definitely era in horse racing.
Do you think the steroids help these horses get stronger, better, and recover more?
Absolutely.
I have to get in one more question. You are the unofficial. You are the commish.
You held off on unofficial because I am the commish.
Okay. Let's just say you were really the commissioner, like Roger Goodell. I'm curious to ask this question. What punishment would you hand down to Marshall Graham? Now, providing that the facts as we know them hold up. I mean, he still has a right to defend himself, and he has said as much in his the times he's spoken up about this. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, you know, he got his hand caught in a cookie jar, and he's not going to get away with anything. And I think that's what's going to happen. What would be your penalty against Marshall Graham?
Marshall Graham deserves a huge penalty. Okay? Huge. Let me tell you how I define huge. Number one, do the investigation. Is it Marshall Graham and 50 other people? Is it Marshall Graham and 500 people? Is it Marshall Graham selling it to other people? What did he do with the data? Who did he share it with? Was this the only person? The independent investigators also to know what Marshall Graham did with this. Did he use it for contests? Did he use it for gambling? Did he use it to buy horses? Did he use it to claim? That's what the investigation is. You know, what did he do with this data? Who else had access? And who else in the game? What if we find out that a Jockey Club steward had the information? What if we found out Heisen knew about this a year and a half ago, but was trying to save, conserve money because they didn't have the money with their $78 million budget so they could? I mean, Lisa's already said, we tried to balance this between being user-friendly and security. I am sorry. That's basically saying the safe door was open. We didn't expect anybody to come in and take the money, but we just couldn't afford a real code. So the code was one, and they tried 10 numbers and they got it right. Marshall Graham is wrong. He needs to be suspended. But I have a funny feeling that there might be 50 other people that need suspended. And I also think that there's some incompetent people that made wrong decisions that probably need to be replaced. And my data was taken from me, right? You can't trust this anymore. And they said it wasn't from us. No, it wasn't. It did not come from us. Absolutely. And then, oh, it did come from us. It wasn't. And honestly, I like Lisa again. I'll say it. Marshall deserves a huge penalty. But who is incompetent for this that has to go? And who else has to have that penalty? And what did he do with the data? That all comes. So I am all in favor. And by the way, I don't want to give this guy credit, but the saddest thing in the world to me that has depressed me is the person on X that broke the news. That is the most embarrassing thing. Like, I want to cry. Like, you gave this guy so much credibility. You can't question whether he's 100% making stuff up anymore. And I've kind of like said, I trust him. I trust him more than the Jockey Club, and I trust him more than Heisen right now. I'm sorry. So that's it. So Renegade is training great. We feel bad for IRAD. Having IRAD is always special. He deserves to be on the horse. Tyler's great. Tyler, patient rider. Todd loves the way Renegade's training. It's a great race. I love that there's a lot of horses. I think that there'll be some pace. And I think we're going to see a great race, not only by Renegade, by a bunch of horses. And this minute talking about Renegade is the only time I smiled on this call. So I'm happy. You know what? A kid from Queens is going for his third canoe. You know, Bill Mott only won his first last year, and there's a bunch of big owners and big trainers that never won one. I know I'm 0-12 in the Derby, but you know, two Travers is pretty cool, and a chance at three. I kind of should cheer me up a little bit today, right? So,
okay, good luck in the Travers, and keep shaking things up, my friend, okay?
I appreciate you saying that, Bill. It means a lot. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Cheers, Mike.
Mike Rapoli, our guest of the week, appeared courtesy of Gainsway Farm. Gainsway stallion Raging Bull had a new graded stakes winner this weekend when Proletariat won the Del Mar Derby, a grade two race. Raging Bull himself, of course, like his name might suggest, as tough as they come, won or placed in 12 graded stakes, and he won three grade ones, earning over $1.7 million. Raging Bull's first three-year-olds are racing now in 2026. Gainsway, power, passion, performance.
Introducing a stallion as top class as they come. In 22 career starts, he won or placed in 12 graded stakes, competing in 15 grade ones, earning over $1.7 million. His undisputed speed is evidenced by 7 100-plus fire speed figures, a three-time grade one winner, Raging Bull.
The Pennsylvania Breeding Program is the best program in the country. The Stallion Awards, the owner bonuses, also the restricted races and the stakes races for Pennsylvania breeds. Last year, 321 Pennsylvania breeders earned Breeders' Awards. 22 Pennsylvania breeders earned over $100,000. We have the best program in the country. Take advantage of the fantastic program that we have.
Learn more at pabred.com.
The TD and Riders Room brought to you by the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association, the PHBA. Here's a number for you. 248. 248. That's the number of breeders who have received a check from the PHBA through the first half of this year. Because in thoroughbred racing, pedigree, of course, matters, but location can determine profitability. The Pennsylvania Thoroughbred Breeding Fund is one of the most lucrative regional incentives programs in North America. It has distributed $23 million, or it did distribute that much, in calendar year 2025, encompassing breeders' awards, stallion awards, owner bonuses, and restricted race purses. To learn more about that PA Bred program, you can contact Brian Sanfratello at 610-444-1050 or just point your browser to pabred.com.
Well, we thought we'd get through a week without any nonsense and scandal-related stuff, but we just can't do it, can we? And this is the latest development in the Marshall Graham story. And he accepted a provisional suspension from HISA, which basically means he's in jail. He can't claim horses. He can't run horses. Can't have any involvement in that sort of stuff. And he even is not allowed to go to a racetrack. So if they catch him on the grounds of Fairmont Park, I suppose security is supposed to tell him, Mr. Graham, you have to leave. This was the right thing to happen, both from HISA and Marshall Graham. It was time to have, this isn't closure, but at least, you know, we have cleaned up the mess somewhat. And it is fair to point out that by agreeing to this, Marshall Graham did not admit any culpability. He has said all along he's going to defend himself, and he has the right to do that. And again, stay tuned. We'll just see how this all plays out. Randy, your take on the latest developments with Marshall Graham?
I don't think all the mess is quite cleaned up yet. I mean, we'll see what all the investigations come up with, and we'll see if the accusations against Marshall Graham match, or the investigation matches exactly what the accusations are. The other part of this is the lack of security by HISA, which I know Mike Rapoli talked a lot about. In the immediate aftermath of the Graham situation last week, after we taped the podcast, there were just an explosion online of different accusations about the security, the lack of security by HISA, which doesn't absolve Marshall Graham of any wrongdoing. He admitted that he exercised some bad judgment. But even Lisa Lazarus, in the aftermath of it, came out and said, you know, HISA was wrong. She was wrong by saying that, you know, that the information didn't come from HISA and that they definitely had some security issues involved that they were looking into and they were going to have to clean up. So there's still a lot left to be learned about everything that went down, I think.
Oh, there's going to be a lot more to come out of this. You mentioned he's a friend of yours. You haven't had a chance to speak to him, obviously.
No, I have not. I know his phone's probably been blown up, and yeah. I haven't wanted to reach out, but I will.
But yeah, there'll be more coming out. The thing that just kind of stuck in my mind was the millions and millions of records of data. The foal crop is 20,000. Like, how is there millions and millions of data that he took? I don't understand the millions. Yes, they've done the right thing by suspending him. And we'll just have to wait for more on this story.
Now, everybody's going to say the most exciting race this weekend is going to be the Travers. I tend to disagree. I think the most exciting race this week is going to be the fifth race on Friday at Monmouth, because I cannot wait to see how the latest chapter in the Fairhill 5 scandal plays out, as we are going to see the first of these horses reappear in the races. And the Great Amira, who was the first of the horses to win on Sunday that we will never forget, and which led to the alleged betting coup, is running at Monmouth. And I don't know if she's going to be the horse that ran dead last in her first two starts, or the horse that looked like Ruffian at Monmouth that day in a maiden claimer. It is, to me, I mean, again, I don't want to shine any, I don't want to put a positive spin on this, because this is not a story that deserves a positive spin. But I'm actually fascinated to see how this horse and the other Quiros horses will run back. Now, I checked with Heise, and I said, you know, why is this horse being allowed to run? And they said, you know, that really we don't have, feel we have any basis to bar the entry. So that's their take on that. Reached out to Monmouth Park to get a comment, whether they considered maybe it was asking the horse to be scratched or whatnot. They did not get back to me. So I don't have any further information on that. Zoe?
I'm going to bet with you.
Amira.
I'm going to bet with you right now that horse does not run.
Really? Okay, interesting. And why do you say that?
I just think it's going to be too much too soon with all the scandal. Somehow that horse is going to be scratched. That's just my opinion.
And Bill, Randy? You could have completely busted me. I would have lost a bottle of wine that you may or may not ever receive. I would have sworn that you would have said that the race you were looking forward to the most was the 11th on Saturday at Saratoga,
we'll where Bookham Dano
tries to win the Porto for the second straight year. Come on, Bill.
All right. Okay, we're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, we're going to focus in on some of the major races at Saratoga on Saturday. But before that, we're going to find out more about the run of success, as always, from the Kentucky Breds, and also the first TV work of the week. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Where do Kentucky Breds win? That is a question, and you might not know the answer. It's the Ebor Festival, of course, in York. The Kentucky bred Baccio, who had previously won the Palace of Holyrood House Handicap at Royal Ascot, proved his quality at another of Europe's premier racing festivals with a wire-to-wire win in Friday's Group 1 Nunthorpe Stakes at York. The race was a win and you're in for the October 31 Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. And after flying across the ocean two times to win at Ascot and York, the Wesley Ward trainee can now walk right out of his barn on Rice Road and simply stroll over to Keeneland for the turf sprint. We'll look forward to seeing him and many other Kentucky Breds. Kentucky Breds, breed them, raise them, race them. We all win.
With some of the fullest fields in the country and quality racing year-round, there's never been a better time to reap the rewards of breeding and racing in Kentucky. Purse money in Kentucky is at an all-time high, as is average purse per race, outpacing California, Florida, and New York. Kentucky Breds. Breed them. Raise them. Race them. We all win.
Be a smarter better with First TV, the best horses. With thousands of exclusive morning workouts. All at your fingertips and delivered right into your inbox. Everything you need to be informed. Be smart. Bet smart. With First TV.
The TDN Writers Room Work of the Week is brought to you by First TV. Earlier in the show, we heard from owner Mike Rapoli, so it's only fitting that we feature his Travers hopeful renegade in this week's First TV Work of the Week. There's Renegade on the outside with his regular work rider aboard, that's Nora aboard, working in company with Sassmaster. The pair worked an easy half mile in 48.87 for trainer Todd Platcher, who was actually forced to choose a new rider for the Jim Dandy winner when it was determined that Irad Ortiz would not recover in time for the Travers. Tyler Gaffione gets the mount.
Well, obviously, we're all looking forward to the Travers. What a race. Other than the Commandment, who's going in the Pennsylvania Derby, they got everybody that matters in this race. And when I first took a look at it, I thought this is just a handicapping nightmare. And it because it's so competitive and there's so many good horses. And as I took a little bit of a deeper dive into it, I've come up with a horse that I actually kind of like. That is Sea Strike. Randy, we'll get your opinion on this. Who has the fastest buyer in the race? Sea Strike is 102 in the Curlin. Chad Brown brought him into that race off two sprints. Obviously loved the mile and an eighth and improved quite a bit. And knowing Chad, that and the Travers being the ultimate goal, I don't think he emptied the tank. Having said that, it's a great race. And I have all the respect in the world for Golden Tempo. And I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if the nation's leading three-year-old does it again. But my money will be on Sea Strike on Saturday, Zoe.
And it's going to be a lot of money on Sea Strike, Bill. He's going to be the wise guy horse, the three-year-old by midshipman. He won the restricted Curlin Stakes by 8 1/4 under Pratt. Pratt rides back. His works, if you ask me who's been working the best going into the Travers, without question, it is the 7 Sea Strike in here. He works solo. His works have been striking, pun intended. So if you think you're getting anywhere close to 5-1 on Sea Strike, think again. He's going to be bet off the board. He gets Pratt as well. Obviously, Chad Brown just upset last weekend with the filly in the Alabama. So he's going to take lots of money, and I love him. He might be my top pick in here. Obviously, Golden Tempo. He just does what he has to in the morning. He's got one work, two works back that was actually really sharp, and his gallop outs have been the best part of his works. He's coming in just as good as he's ever done. You know, there just might be another three-year-old that runs them all off their feet, and that could be Sea Strike. I was a little bemused, Randy, and I feel so bad for Vargas getting taken off of Baby Vino. Now, I understand. I don't know if it was Lindsay's decision. She says that, you know, Paco's worked this horse from day one, but he rode this horse so well to be taken off after winning a Grade One race the way he won it and beating Paco on Napoleon Solo. I just feel really bad for Vargas.
Yeah. And the way he won it, slipping through along the inside. Yes. I mean, you can blame Paco for that maybe, but still, I mean, his ride was really the difference in the race, getting through inside of Napoleon Solo. But then you remember that the only reason he was riding the horse in the Haskell to begin with is that Paco chose to ride Napoleon Solo instead. So yes. there's a lot to unpack there. About Sea Strike, one of the advantages he has, I think, is going to be that he'll be more forwardly placed than a lot of the other leading contenders. He'll be more forward than Golden Tempo for sure. He'll be more forward than Renegade. He'll be more forward than Emerging Market and some of these other horses. You're probably going to have Napoleon Solo on the lead with Johnny V, and you'll have Leading Change and Sea Strike also right up there as well. But what that means is I think there's going to be a little bit more pace in this race than there was in the Jim Dandy. And Renegade was still able to make up 10 lengths in the last 3.5 furlongs or so and get past Commandment and Silent Tactic to win it. I loved the way Renegade won that race. And so I think he's the horse to beat in the Travers. That's going to be my pick, especially at 1 1/4. I think he'll be even better at 1 1/4. As he was in the Kentucky Derby. But I think it comes down to those three. It comes down to Renegade, Sea Strike, and Golden Tempo, and I kind of like him in that order.
Solo's been working awfully well as well.
Has he? Okay.
Oh, yeah. But he always does. He always does. He's been working like a champ, and he picks up Johnny V. The Puma has been working very well. His gallop outs are the best part of his works. It's going to be a terrific race.
The Puma, also known as the Puma here in America. But Zoe, we love to poke some fun at you over that. Okay, so other major races on the card. I mean, there's going to be a lot of focus on the Alan Jerkins because Englishman is a very exciting horse. I mean, he could not have looked better in the Woody Stevens where he got that gaudy 115 buyer number. But you know what? I'm going to try to beat him because I think this is going to be Local Knowledge's day. Outside of that one crazy buyer, the Englishman has been in the 90s. So is the one buyer an outlier or not? We'll find out. But it's not that I don't like the Englishman, but I'm just trying to get a little value here. And I love the way Todd Pletcher has brought this horse up to the race. He's improved with every start, ran a 103 buyer in the Amsterdam, only won by a head. But this, to me, is a horse that I don't think we've seen the best of him yet. So, Randy, I'm predicting what would be a mild upset.
Yeah, it would be a mild upset. Englishman's best sprinter in America. 5.5, 6.5, 7. I don't care how far he runs. He'll be the favorite if he stays sound in the Breeders' Cup sprint, in my opinion. And I just think he's just so superior to this bunch that rather than try to beat him at 1-5, I would just pass the race and watch it. Local Knowledge is a nice horse, but he was life and death to beat Solitude Dude, another nice horse who's also in the race. And look what Englishman did to Solitude Dude in the Woody Stevens. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to this race, not from a betting perspective, but just to watch Englishman.
I'm looking for a Maxfield Exacta. Englishman over Deep Flame coming in for Brad Cox. Everything Brad Cox is sending from Churchill is just firing, firing, firing. His stats with horses shipping from Churchill Downs are pretty darn good. I don't know the exact numbers, but it just seems every time I look, oh, Churchill shipper, Brad Cox. Yeah, winner, winner. I like Deep Flame in there, along with the Englishman or Englishman.
In the forego, I would pick Bookham Dano if he was running in the Cheltenham Gold Cup. We all know that at this point. But, man, this looks like a layup for him to me. The older sprint division, especially with Ben Tornado exiting the scene, it is very weak outside of Bookham Dano. And this is a race they've pointed for all year. They've managed him very well this year. They've promised the world they're going to run in the Breeders' Cup. So I think, you know, I'm not going out on a limb. And Randy Moss, you are guilty of blasphemy saying that Englishman is the horse to beat in the Breeders' Cup sprint and not Bookham Dano. But we'll have a bet a bottle of wine. Come Breeders' Cup sprint day. How about that?
So tell me this. You're an expert in all things Bookham Dano. Mm-hmm. He was 1-10 in his last race in the Mr. Prospector at Monmouth. I know horses don't run exactly the same way every time they run, but he was underwhelming in his victory. Why do you think that was?
Because it was an exhibition race. I mean, that's what it was. And, you know, they ran there strictly to do Monmouth Park a favor and to put a little life into the meet. I think it was a very sporting thing to do because they could have run in a much richer race somewhere else. You're right. It was somewhat underwhelming, but considering the circumstances, I don't really hold it against them. That was not a race that they were, was a major goal. Saturday's forego was the major goal. And, knowing how they've campaigned him, I think, and actually his victory last year in the forego was one of his poorer races of the year. And, one of the reasons why they didn't run him in the Breeders' Cup sprint, because they weren't happy with his forego performance, where his numbers fell both on the Thoroughgraph sheets and the buyer numbers as well. All right. So once again, we'll have plenty to talk about on next week's show, because we're going to wrap up the Travers, all the action from Saratoga, over the weekend. Maybe we'll even get a chance to talk about the St. Louis Derby. I think that's a pretty cool event. Wesley Ward taking aim at that, not getting a lot of attention, but I did want to mention that.
TD and Riders Room, also brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds, which acquired 11 yearlings from the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sales, and every one of them is now sold out. So West Point thanks its partners for their tremendous response. Next up for West Point, the Keeneland September Yearling Sale, where West Point will once again team with bloodstock agent David Engordo. This marks Engordo's 10th year scouting the sales for West Point, a partnership that auspiciously began with the purchase of Best Performance, who went on to finish second in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf. To learn more about West Point, go to www.westpointtb.com.
all the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
So that's a wrap on this week's show. I want to thank my partners, Zoe Cadman and Randy Moss. I want to thank the commish, Mike Rapoli, who gave us plenty to chew on in his interview in the Gainesway as the Gainesway guest of the week. As I say every week, the show would not be possible and it wouldn't look nearly as good as it does each week if it weren't for our behind-the-scenes team who do such an excellent job. That's Sue Finley, Katie Petruniak, Anthony LaRocca, and Leo LaRocca. Thanks for watching. Thanks for tuning us in. And we'll be back next week with another edition of the TDN Writers Room Podcast presented by Keeneland.